everyone. My name is Kevin Williams, Manager of Equity Inclusion at Fresno EOC, and I would love to welcome you to another edition of the Poverty Fighters podcast. It's been a nice, relaxing holiday season, and it's time to jump back into work. I hope everybody is getting into the flow of things again. I hope that you were able to have a wonderful holiday season with family and friends, and that we are excited about what is to come in this next new year. But as we launch into 2022, we are bringing with us the ever-continuing global health crisis that has been COVID-19. I'm sure that a lot of you, as I am, are pretty weary of talking about it, worrying about it, hearing about it at this point. 2 years is a long time to be trying to navigate a health crisis that seems like is never going to end. Over 848,000 United States citizens have died in the past 2 years from COVID-19, with over 57 million cases nationally. Some people are going to have long-term effects from contracting COVID-19, even though they're fully recovered. As we're getting back from the holidays, we're hearing a lot of concerns from scientists and from different countries that there will be another spike with the, Omicron variant having a very, very increased transmission rate with more and more breakthrough cases that we're seeing across the country. This discourse, right, around COVID-19 has been less than pleasant. Some believing that the virus doesn't warrant as much attention as it's getting, that mask mandates and vaccination rates are antithetical to the ideas of American freedom. And then you have another side that believes masks and, vaccines are the best way to protect ourselves, to stop the spread of the virus and prevent deaths. That's led to, mandates for masks, mandates for closures, and mandates for vaccinations that we're seeing now. I'll admit, especially as an immunocompromised person myself, I do believe that vaccination, social distancing, and wearing masks are the best method of preventing infection and stopping the spread. That being said, I also think it is important that we change the way that we discuss the response to the COVID-19 pandemic. There's clearly been a national divide among this topic. And then, unfortunately, that, national divide isn't a new phenomenon. And if we've seen anything in the past 4 years, not even the past 2 years, it's that we as a nation don't really listen to hear and understand to each other, but we listen to respond. We so easily and actively vilify each other as, this side or that side, the left and the right, the radical left or the radical right. And we do that and vilify people who don't hold our viewpoints. And I've come to find that a lot of our debates aren't about learning, right? But they're rather about shaming and discrediting. And I think one of the challenges that we see, particularly in, the midst of this global crisis, is that when we do that, we lose the merit and truth that lay in the experiences of the quote unquote other side. Let me be clear. I'm not saying that either has a moral high ground. I'm not saying that, we should do things and accept things that jeopardize ourselves and make us feel unsafe. What I am saying is that at a time when everything is dysfunction, it is important to understand the value and concepts of where somebody else is coming from. It doesn't mean that that absolves anybody of consequences for what they do. It doesn't mean that it absolves anybody of responsibility for their actions. But actions, right, are a symptom of something else. And so if we're ever going to you know, move forward and understand each other, right? We have to understand what that something else is. What is the thing driving the action? We can't stop at the action. The action is a behavior. The behavior is a symptom. It's telling you something. It's a communication. What is it communicating? And I think that's what we have to get to the brass tacks of. And we only know that if we really begin to listen to understand. So as I said before, you know, I'm in support of vaccines and masks, and I am vaccinated, and, you know, I'm not perfect, but I do try to make sure that I wear a mask when I'm in close quarters with someone else, or indoors. However, I do think that is important that we look through this lens of critical thinking, and history, rather than righteous indignation. You know, when we're having this discourse over vaccination regulation, you know, as an agency that's receiving federal funding, EOC, Fresno EOC, has been mandated that everyone working here has to be vaccinated. And, you know, that has obviously presented some challenges. And we've accepted that, you know, it is very, very possible that there are people that we won't be able to employ any longer because of that policy. You know, and that's a hard decision. And, you know, I know that many of us, many people on face value, you know, may not understand why somebody would make that decision, you know, to risk their livelihood rather than taking a couple shots that would just prevent them from getting ill and prevent them from giving it to somebody else. It seems really, really simple. And I think today what I'd like to do is challenge us to see things through a different perspective. And I'm not talking about conspiracy theory. Everything that I'm presenting here is going to be factual evidence of these different positions and evidence of why people have trepidation about these things. And again, the point isn't to discredit science. The point isn't to justify anybody's actions, but again, it is to present information that helps us understand better why somebody may not want to get vaccinated, why there's so much trepidation behind it. And then we'll begin to really and genuinely understand, then we can begin to address. So let's go back, if you can remember, to the beginning of the pandemic. January 2020 was the first confirmed case of COVID-19 in the United States. Within a week, the FDA announced that it was going to take critical actions to advance the development of, you know, these, you know, medical, you know, countermeasures, you know, vaccines. And this would include interagency health partnership with the CDC. On March 11th, the virus was obviously going across the globe, and the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 as a global pandemic. And then President Donald Trump declared a national emergency just a couple of days later. So, and that was on the 13th of March. Then on the 15th, the quarantine process began in the United States, starting and, you know, that first one to fall was the New York public school system, which is the biggest public school system in the country. Then that was followed by schools, restaurants, bars, gyms, everything just about was shut down. I'm sure we all remember that. However, even with those shutdowns, there were certain facilities that remained open that were considered essential. Right. And those were, you know, grocery stores, hardware stores, mechanic shops, nonprofit organizations that provide food and shelter and essential needs to people, and childcare. And so, you know, EOC was one of those organizations that remained open in that, you know, we have our Head Start program. And we have food services and all these different programs that are vital to the people that we serve, that we just could not afford to have a situation where people didn't have access to those things. And that being said, right, while all these people that are working in these jobs that are considered essential to keep the country moving forward, to keep us going, When the vaccinations were originally made available in December of 2020, those essential workers who had suffered the most exposure and who were not able to quarantine, again, in order to keep the country moving, they weren't at the top of the list of who is eligible for vaccinations. So we have a group of people who we have deemed are necessary to keep us going, to keep things going, to make sure that people have food, to make sure people have clothing, and have to risk their lives in this global pandemic to make sure that everybody else can live. And when the protections from this deadly virus remain available, they weren't allowed to have any. Now, that's obviously not the case for medical workers. Medical staff were able to get it, and the elderly were able to get it, which absolutely, right? Because they are at high risk, right? Because they are in the medical profession. That makes sense, right? But if we're talking about people who are consistently exposed, who are vital to our society being able to function, it is questionable to me that these people would not be able to get vaccinated, especially with how deadly it is, how much we're trying to control the spread, how much we're trying to make sure that we limit people's exposure. And the people who are essentially forced to be exposed, we don't allow them to get vaccinated. They weren't part of the first group, second group, or the third group. By the December 24th, Christmas Eve, it's estimated that more than 1 million people in the U.S. had been vaccinated. And yet, vaccinations were still not available to those who were consistently exposed and those essential workers. You know, it's interesting. You know, these essential workers who are the foundations of the operations of our nation are often people of color. In fact, people of color are overrepresented in essential workers. So it should really not come as a surprise that in the April of 2020, hundreds of doctors and civil rights groups urged the CDC and the US government to release racial and ethnic data on COVID-19. To ensure that there was proper protection and response for communities of color. And just a day after this, it was discovered that 68% of COVID-19 related deaths in the city of Chicago occurred in the African-American community. So, what does that mean? What does that say? What does that tell you? Right? Essential workers, the people who were demanded to work without protection during this global pandemic, were significantly more likely to be living at or below the poverty line. They're significantly more likely to not have adequate health insurance, significantly more likely to live in a cohabitative setting. And that group of people is overrepresented by people of color. So, process of elimination, critical thinking would tell you, then it's surely really not a surprise that people are worried about Black and brown communities suffering death at a higher rate. And we saw that played out. And so then the question becomes, based on how we're acting, if this is a public health crisis, why would these people who were not able to quarantine and protect themselves and who are less likely to be able to get medical treatment not being the first group of people eligible to receive vaccination? Or maybe it didn't matter. As long as the only people that are infected by the virus are the people that we give the least consideration to, that we've already decided are expendable, the people that we so often take for granted. That is a very uncomfortable statement. It's a very uncomfortable question. And yet, we still haven't answered the question of why we didn't get them vaccinated first. And so if we don't deal with that question, we don't answer that question, then the people that are impacted with this are only left with either you didn't ever care about my life, or this pandemic isn't as bad as it seems. Those are the options that that leaves. And so when they come to these conclusions, how dismissive is dismissive of us to suggest that it's not founded in a reality, that it's not founded in an experience, all right? And then for those that decided that I'm not going to risk my life, I'm going to stay home, all right? People vilified them as lazy, said that they're living off the government, right? Imagine that. Imagine being chastised for not being willing to put your life at risk for an unlivable wage that won't allow you to pay for medical care. Imagine that. Vilifying you because you aren't willing to risk your life to make scraps and be exposed to something that could kill you and your family. How dare you? And the truth of the matter is that fear is not just all about the present, right? It's the historical reasons why people have trepidation around getting vaccinated. And the United States has a well-documented history of medical malpractice and harm. I don't know if any of you have heard of the Tuskegee Syphilis Study, the full name of which is the Tuskegee Syphilis, the Tuskegee Study of Untreated Syphilis in the Negro Male. Yeah. The study was conducted between 1932 and 1972 by the United States Public Health Service and the CDC, with the sole purpose being to observe the effects of syphilis when left untreated. Even though midway through the study, medical advances had been developed that would treat and cure the disease. So during this study, as you can tell by the title, Black men were injected with syphilis, right, and told that they would get free medical care. However, they were not told that they had syphilis. And when they were given treatment, they were given placebos or diagnostic treatments rather than medicines that would cure them. They were also told that the experiment would only last 6 months. 6 months went and extended to 40 years. 40 years. And in November 1972, the study was ended, not because they found what they wanted, not because they understood how they were impacting these men's lives, not because they understood the ethical implications of it, but because the story was leaked by the press. And so to get bad publicity, that's why they ended it. Several of those patients died from syphilis. Others died from complications of syphilis. And then some of them passed the disease on to their family and children, with some children actually being born with congenital syphilis. So let's think about that. You have two government agencies that injected people with something and told them that they would get health and medical care, did not provide that. Those people died. And not only do they die, they pass that sickness on to their spouses and their children and their families. And if that ended in 1972, which is 50 years ago, some of them are still alive. And if these people are the same people now that we're asking and demanding trust the public health and CDC to give them something to prevent a sickness, why should they trust us? Why should they trust the CDC? Why should they trust vaccinations? Why? It's going to be different this time? How? Prove it. It's a bond of trust that was broken. We still haven't addressed it as a nation. We still haven't come to terms with it. And rather than do that and have that difficult conversation, we disregard people's experience. This isn't the only evidence of medical malpractice and harm that we've seen in this country. California, this very state, between 1909 and 1979, had a eugenics law that forcibly sterilized 20,000 women, predominantly Black, Latina, and Indigenous women. And a state audit revealed that this was happening even up until 2014, with over 1,000 women being forcibly sterilized between 1997 and 2014. And in these situations, you had women inmates who were falsely told by the medical staff that they had cervical cancer and needed their reproductive organs removed, and or doctors performed non-consensual hysterectomies after they gave birth if they were pregnant. 20,000 women forcibly sterilized after being told incorrectly, falsely, intentionally, that they had cervical cancer. That was in law, people. That was in law. The government. More recently, in 2018, it was discovered that the Minneapolis Police Department had requested emergency workers inject suspects and others with ketamine, including some who are already restrained. For those who don't know, ketamine is a sedative drug, which even in the Minneapolis Police Department manual is classified as a date rape drug, and has intense side effects, such as changes in blood pressure and heart rate, agitation, confusion, hallucinations. So this is not something to mess around with. In several of the cases where this was used, the drug actually caused heart and breathing failure and required people that were injected to be revived or incubated. And this was going on not to people in jail. And these are people being arrested. Not that anybody should be subject to this without their consent. But these are suspects. These are people who hadn't been convicted of anything. These are people who, I'm sorry, if I understand our judicial system correct, are not guilty, because you're innocent until proven guilty. They didn't get to trial yet. They didn't even get charged yet. They're suspects. And you injected them with ketamine. A report showed that the number of documented injections of ketamine during police calls in 2018 was 62. And this is an increase from 3 in 2012. These were done without the consent of the individual, and oftentimes in direct objection to their personal refusals. So, again, we have things being injected to people that can cause significant harm that people are forced into, and not only just forced into that, it's forced into them. So when we talk about vaccine mandates, this is what people are hearing. This is what people are hearing. When you say forced mandate, right, mandate, what they're hearing is ketamine injection. What they're hearing is forced sterilization. What they're hearing is medical emergencies that I won't get treated for. these things really happened. These things are still happening. Okay. That doesn't even touch the inequities in medical care and outcomes that exist. It was only just a few years ago, I believe that it was 2016, that the National Association of Medicine released a report that concluded that racial and ethnic minorities receive lower quality health care, even when insurance, status, income, age, and severity of conditions are comparable. So even if you have the money, even if you have the income, even if you have the health insurance, even if you have the status, you're probably going to get, it's more likely that you'll receive a less successful medical care experience. It was also found that people of color are less likely to be given correct cardiac care, less likely to receive dialysis or transplants, and less likely to receive the best treatments for stroke, cancer, and AIDS. This was followed up by a PNAS, which is the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States. They had an article that found that there was racial bias in pain assessment and treatment recommendations between Black and white patients, that there is still significant false belief in the medical field that there are biological differences between Blacks and whites that make pain more bearable for Black patients. 25% of the in-residence doctors surveyed believe that Black people had thicker skin and thicker nerve endings, which meant that they could take more pain. In 2016, this was. You know, and that led to African-Americans being 34% less likely to be prescribed opioids than white patients with similar conditions. 34% less likely to receive the care for the same condition. So when you ask the question about trusting your medical, your trusted medical professional, who is that? Who is that? If it's possible, significantly likely that I'll get worse care than somebody else, even if we have the same amount of money, even if we have the same status, even if we have the same education. Imagine if I don't have the same status or same education or same access or same wealth, what kind of service am I going to get? And if I'm not going to get adequate service, why would I risk it by getting, by putting this thing in my body that you say I need? Why should I trust you? Further, the U.S. has the highest maternal mortality rate in the developed world. Women of color are 3 to 4 times more likely to die during childbirth. So what does this all have to do with COVID vaccinations? Well, let's ask. If the medical professionals have a history, if there is a history, of malpractice and abuse, if the outcomes for everyone aren't the same, and the truth is, speaking as a person who may not be vaccinated, and I may get worse care or treatment than someone else, if I may not get adequate care, if there's a problem, why should I trust you? Why should I trust that this is in the best interest of my health? As a country, that's a hard space to be in, to navigate, to hear that. But we do have to hear it. Right? How do we begin to rebuild that trust? How do we rebuild those bridges? How do we acknowledge the fact that that's a reality? Then you think about, if they do accept that the virus is as bad as it seems, as we've been told, what does that mean? That means I've been required to go out unprotected so you can stay home and quarantine and be safe. All the while, I was actively refused the protection of vaccination. And now that you want to go back outside, now that you are tired of being in the house, you're demanding that I get vaccinated for your safety? If I've already been exposed and made the quote unquote sacrificial lamb of this pandemic, what's my incentive to take the vaccine? Why should I care about your health? You didn't care about mine. If the concern was the health of the essential worker, it should have been made available to them first. The people who are going to be, other than, you know, medical staff, who are going to be the most exposed. And if it's about the protection of others, how can we expect these same people who we were willing to sacrifice to care about what happens to us? Us being those who are able to quarantine, who didn't have to risk their lives every day, who have access to medical care, right? Who weren't lambasted for staying at home and called lazy. In that lens, it would seem that the mandate really isn't about public safety, but about the safety of some. And unfortunately, to some degree, you could conclude that from the recent quarantine mandate of decreasing from 10 days to 5. When asked about this, Dr. Fauci said, "We want to get people back to the jobs, particularly those with essential jobs, to keep our society running smoothly." And let's be very clear, there is science that supports a 5-day quarantine. However, when asked, why is it decreased from 10 to 5? The answer wasn't about the science first. It wasn't about the decreased safety. The first response was about getting people back to work and keeping society running smoothly at the expense of essential workers. And yes, this is only the case for people who are asymptomatic. So if you have symptoms, you stay in quarantine for 10 days. If you're asymptomatic, it's 5. But then that begs the question, isn't one of the main reasons the pandemic has continued because of the spread by asymptomatic people? Right? It's the people who don't have symptoms that aren't wearing masks. Right? And so when they don't wear the mask, then it spreads. Right? Wasn't that the whole thing? So now, 2 years in, and we're still willing to sacrifice the safety of some for the benefit of others. And so maybe we have to deal with the fact that the reason people don't want to get vaccinated is because our governments and our systems and society broke their trust. Maybe people don't want to get it vaccinated because of the continuous harm that has been done to people intentionally. Maybe people don't want to get vaccinated because they don't trust that the government has their best interests at heart. Maybe people saw the lead water crisis in Flint, Michigan, and said, you know, maybe I don't want to mess with nothing with the government because they're not interested in keeping me safe. Public safety is not important to them. It's all about the money. Mind you, let's also point out that most of us know about the Flint, Michigan water crisis. What we don't know is that that wasn't the only place where that was occurring. Contaminated water with lead had been found in Flint, Baltimore, Chicago, Detroit, Milwaukee, New York, Pittsburgh, and Washington, D.C. What do those places all have in common? Significantly large populations, people of color. When you think about that, and you think about the fact that we have a society where some people are continuously put in danger, then it begins to make sense why there's trepidation in trusting the words of the CDC, the words of government officials. Something we have to wrestle with. Maybe people's trepidation has nothing to do with the vaccine itself, but with the society that produced it. Maybe people's anger isn't about science, but about history. Maybe we're arguing about two different things. Maybe there's no moral high ground in being for or against vaccinations. Maybe it's time to wrestle with the fact that both things can be true at the same time. Maybe it's time we listen to each other and listen to learn, to empathize, and not just listen to be right. And maybe if we start acknowledging the broken trust, we can start to repair it. And maybe when no one is expendable, everybody will be safe. Maybe the pandemic that we need to be addressing is the pandemic of harm. I think if we solve one, we'd solve the other. Just something to think about. Now, this is a heavy topic. I know that we're still reeling and hearing about COVID-19 and the pandemic. What I would suggest to all of us as we keep ourselves safe in the way that we know how is that when we're having these conversations and we're having this debate, to really listen to each other. Listen to each other and listen to our experiences. Listen to how people are experiencing this. Don't listen to be right. Listen to learn. Listen to hear. Again, if we can solve one of these global pandemics, we'll solve the other. Until next time, take care of yourself and each other. Looking forward to a beautiful and prosperous 2022. Until next time, everybody, have a good one.